webcasting to the world.
You remember the moment you saw yourself and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 10th of March, 2016, broadcasting from the home of Redemptionism, where we love every train of thought visiting our station of freedom. We're coming to you from the GR Studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee, where with John Wesley, that would be the founder of the Methodists, we say, through the name of Christ, all can and shall obtain life and salvation. And here from the GRHQ in Houston, Texas, is that great unteacher himself, the heretic's hope, the preacher's paradox, and the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. G'day, Mike. How are you?
G'day, Barris Bartlett. I am doing pretty fine.
Well, that's good to hear.
That's what we say in Tennessee. I'm fine.
What do you say in Texas?
I ain't none of your damn business.
I thought in Texas you said, you talking to me?
You talking to me?
You yeah. talking to me?
Well, with our new open carry laws, nobody asks anybody how they are anymore.
That's why Americans, for all of our overseas listeners, I want to tell you, as a non-American, that's why Americans are nice. You see Americans all over the world, and they're just really nice people. But I'm here to tell you, they're nice because they don't know whether you're carrying or not.
Don't know whether you're toting, yeah.
So what's happening in the world of the GR right now, Michael?
Bierce, I've just spoken with our new project manager.
Oh.
Yes, Chris Novak, who she and her husband live just west of the Chicago area. And we're looking forward to getting this all started. I've put her on delay a few times because we wanted to go ahead and get this project with the website done. I spoke with Jeff just yesterday, and he was telling me that as far as the development of the website and the person we've hired to do it, that is pretty much done. But she is walking us through, or walking Jeff through right now, adding all of our product and our specifics onto the site. And from what it sounds like, what's going on right now in the GR is that Jeff is quite busy. So
I think he is. I think he's as busy as a one-armed paper hanger. I had a look at the site just before we went to air today, and I got to tell you, it's looking great. I'm sure you've seen it too, Mike.
Yes. So for all means and purposes, for those of you who have been listening, our website is finished.
So is Kim Novak, is she going to be cracking the whip a bit? Or what?
My great hopes are anyway.
She's not going to be like Hazel. I mean, one Hazel's enough. Come on.
Exactly.
She rings me every month to tell me to bank all my back checks, and she threatened me with you last time, and I laughed at her. I said, ah.
Yeah, and of course I've told her to stop threatening you with your undeposited bank checks and start threatening you with the one you have not deposited. I told her the threats need to be moved up quite drastically.
Oh, dear.
So, yes, we are moving on. This is a good thing. I have an announcement to make that is really quite a heartbreak. The Amick family, who's been a part of the Gospel Revolution for quite some time from St. Cloud, Minnesota, they gave me a call on Thursday, and I found out that their daughter had committed suicide. Real tragedy, but we want to just say that our hearts go out to the Amick family. I will be going up to do the memorial service this month. Michael Blanche will be joining me there in Minneapolis, and then we will be going from there to St. Cloud Michael's going to be playing his guitar and doing some songs for the memorial. This is a real heartbreaking thing, but I didn't want to go without mentioning it to the other folks. The Amics just recently, in the last couple of years or so, came up to spend some time with us in Calgary. And what delightful people. This has been an ongoing struggle for Angela for many, many years. And then this happened quite suddenly and unexpectedly. So, you know, folks, a lot of times we feel that life has just been kind of rough with us. And then you get a phone call like this and you realize that for this family, you have nothing to compare to the loss that they're going through and the grief and the sadness. And our hearts are with them. Going through with something like this and going up, I'm honored that they've asked me to go. And I'm going to do my best to be as much encouragement. Michael and I both will be as good representatives of the gospel and the gospel revolution. We'll be addressing about 200 mourners that will be there at this memorial. And we hope to just share comfort with them. We don't try to preach any doctrine to them, change their minds, but hopefully there'll be words that will be there to help us to comfort this family and the friends of this dear girl. I knew Angela. We spoke on the phone. It's been quite some time since I've heard from her the last time. And then get this phone call that just suddenly, and this was a very sudden turn of events that they were not expecting, for sure.
I hate sad news. I always hate sad news. But after we talked about this, I was thinking, I don't look forward to the next funeral I have to attend or officiate at in a Christian atmosphere. I'll go. If I'm asked to participate, I will. But I don't want to hear those songs in the Sweet By and By. I don't want to hear those songs about, you know, just beyond Jordan and all of that. I want to hear what my mate Billy Couch said when he took a funeral. There was a Baptist preacher sitting on the platform, and my mate Billy Couch from Nashville, he took it, and he told people to be comforted that this boy, and I don't know how much of the gospel Billy Couch had in him at that time. I just know that, and I don't think he had, I think it was before he met the gospel revolution, but He was done with telling people, you know, I was trained to never waste a good crisis.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, and I would tell them, if they were in hell, would you like to not go where this person's gone? Oh man. And Jesus said, comfort the brokenhearted. And we just went right on in and manipulated it. I can't ever feel sorry enough for some of that stuff.
You know, this is what's the sad thing about it. You know, a lot of people say, well, everybody's getting this everywhere, or everybody's got it everywhere. And yet here is a couple in Minnesota that, now they do love me, but they said that they did not know anyone that they could invite in to do this memorial without hearing all of the Christian doctrine. It's as to what you were speaking of. So we're bringing the gospel revolution to them. So the president and the vice president are showing up at this memorial.
Man.
And I'll guarantee you Michael Blanch's music certainly will not be in the Sweet By and By. Most all of these songs he wrote while he was traveling with me.
Mm.
So we really hope to be an encouragement and just a source of comfort to these folks. Goodness gracious, I can't even imagine. I don't want to imagine what they are going through, but I certainly hear it in their voices, that's for sure.
Gospel Revolution.
Michael, this week we heard from Connie. Well, actually not this week. I pulled this up from your Facebook page, from Connie Lynn Nelson. And she says, Mike, I'm just rereading your book, One, And I wanted to thank you again for writing it. It's marvelous all over again. Hope you have another one in the works. Guess that's what Kim Novak's going to be doing for us.
Exactly. That's going to be the first part of her active participation with the Gospel Revolution, and that is bringing the Book of Galatians, which we are publishing. I'm publishing the Book of Galatians. That sounds a little weird. It's already been published, hasn't it?
I'm sure you'll rewrite it to our own satisfaction. Hey, this week on Facebook also, I heard from John McLeod to Mike Williams, who said, "Hi, Mike, would you and Bera shed some light on the Book of Revelation, chapters 19, 20, and 20? Why stop there?
I mean, we go on all the way back to creation, right?
Through Revelation. Chapters 19, 20, and 21 in one of your podcasts. Thanks, Mike. Okay, John. We could do a whole podcast on this if we wanted to, but let's start with just a pricey. What do you think, Mike?
Let's not and say we did.
All faces or all tears will be wiped away from faces. I think that we should reference that and reference it back to the Old Testament quote and say this is a deliberate mistranslation. This is from allegedly John, who knew the old prophets. He was raised as a Jewish lad. I presume that he was doing this from memory. He can't have been reading it from the Septuagint or the old the Tanakh. He can't have possibly been reading it, because let's say he doesn't mistranslate it deliberately. He doesn't just mistranslate it, though. What he does is he mistranslates it, stands it on its head, and then calls it real.
And not only that, takes it completely away, if he is speaking of a future event, takes it out of the category of Scripture that Jesus said was all fulfilled at the cross. So I was driven back to the Scriptures and found out that the New Testament derivative of that certainly was in no context as to what that actually said in the Hebrew. So knowing that most of these things are quotes from the Old Testament, I decided to go back and find the reference. And lo and behold, I had to shake the cobwebs out of my head 3 or 4 times to realize it didn't say anything that John said. Now, the one thing we do know is that whether we could say John did it deliberately or not, we do know that it served his purpose for what he was teaching on.
Let's just go back to that. In the prophets, the scripture says that the day will come when God wipes tears from all faces. John interprets this in his own quaint style. He says that God will wipe all tears from some faces.
Yes.
Now that is... The reason I'm highlighting this verse, John, is it in our email, is because if he got that wrong, what else has he got wrong? And that's up in those chapters of...
Excellent point.
Yeah, that's up in those chapters of Rev. In fact, we can look at the verse, just because we've got people out there who will be checking up on me.
Well, we know every reference that he quoted in the Old Testament, he quoted out of context. That's just all there is to it. This one, and this is one... Bears, this is great. You're doing this really wonderful. Lead me along, and I will follow. This is a perfect point to show that not only did he quote this out of context, he misquoted it and used it for a purpose it was not intended. So why do we want to go through all three chapters?
Now, we may come back to this, John, one day, but for now, our problem with these three chapters, in fact, our problem with the whole book of Revelation, is that it depends for its fear manipulation, which is what it's used for, almost entirely now. I mean, look, here's what's going to happen. You're either going to make it through the tribulation, or you're going to be taken home before the tribulation, but your kids who haven't accepted Jesus as their Savior, they're going to have to put up with the tribulation. A third of the world is going to get wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
A third of the food, a third of the people, all of this is going to happen. Your kids might be one of them, John. And The problem with this whole thing is it's nothing but fair manipulation by somebody who is well-rooted in Jewish tradition. We know that from the writings to the seven churches and the sins that were outlined as being bad sins. We know that the book, at least the first three chapters, we know it was written to counter Paul because Paul was the only one to tell people that they could eat meat offered to idols as long as they didn't stumble anyone else. And yet, what does John say in the letters to the churches? That he says, Jesus was saying, apparently Jesus said that what Paul said was wrong. Because this is Jesus writing to the churches, and he says, I'm going to bash your brains out if you eat meat offered to idols. And so the whole book for us raises more questions than ever it answers.
Mm-hmm.
Can we leave it there, do you think?
I think we can. And, Bears, let me add to this just a little bit for those maybe that's not heard this comparison between John's quoting this from the Old Testament and what it actually says. And if which we have done this, we've gone back and we see that the reason God is wiping all tears, tears off all faces is because his judgment is being taken away. So we know that that's the cross. The reason that John is implying that tears are going to be wiped away is because, woe is me, now you don't have to put up with this old life here on earth anymore. And that's just not the issue. This is very specifically targeted understanding and prophecy about the moment in which God would remove all anger and judgment from off the earth. Why were they weeping and crying? Well, the Old Testament told us many times, prophets and the law, that when the judgment was coming, they would sound the trumpet, long, loud, straight blast of the trumpet, and the people would go into mourning and because they knew the judgment of God was coming. So it's in that context that the prophet says, and God shall wipe away all tears.
Those two verses, if you'd like to compare them, the Old Testament reference is in Isaiah 25, verse 8, and the New Testament quotation of that Old Testament reference is in Revelation 21, verse 4. John, thanks for your email. I know that you'd probably like us to delve deeper into this, and we wouldn't mind doing it. It's just once we unearth one problem, you've got to ask yourself what else could be problematic there as well.
Exactly.
Let me see. This week we got from someone who's called Dread Project. D-Red Project. Anyway, says, you all might like this. I found Religion 101 on website BBC Future. That's a British Broadcasting Corporation. The man who studies the spread of ignorance. I think Beres will like this article. Oh, Wayne. Wayne is the Dread Project. And he gave me a BBC link, but if you go to the BBC and I would go search for the man who studies the spread of ignorance. Yeah, this is a great – I liked it. I liked it a lot. And on the new website, I'd like to put up a link to this. Thanks very much, Wayne. Appreciate that. Then we heard from James Gustafson. Now, James Gustafson, this guy is – we love him a lot. And that is not the prelude to me saying, but anything. We just love him a lot. And but when he gets his, oh, there I go with the but. When James gets his teeth into something, and of course when you see James, you understand why not too many people oppose him. But he says, Mike, I was reading in Acts, and in chapter 2:20 came across before the coming of the great and awesome day of the Lord. I remember a session where you explained the day of the Lord being the resurrection, a specific day. What a relief that was. Recently, a friend of ours recited all the verses starting at 17, saying that there are the things that are going on now in the last days, especially referring to dreams, prophecies, and visions. I tried to explain the last days referred to had already taken place, and of course it didn't go well. At the time, I didn't know where this friend was quoting from, and just by a shotgun approach, a few days later, I started reading in Acts, and I came across this and the day of the Lord. If I had just known, I would have addressed that too. I bet you would have, James. James, it's a long email. I'm not going to read it all, but you just keep going, James. We love what you're doing. And he says, just one more. We were watching the US electoral debate, which has been, now James is in Canada, by the way, which has been a bit amusing, and a lady who was visiting and who we turned the TV on for so she could watch said, I think he's a man of sin, the Antichrist. I told her who the Bible says the man of sin was and quoted, he who knew no sin became sin for us that we might become the righteousness of Christ. That created quite a debate in itself. I'm done, James.
Yeah. And when he says I'm done, he meant I'm done. And so many of you can relate to this letter. And again, if you knew James, not just what Bears has described of his physical presence, but his heart is just as large. It's just
biggest Texas.
It's just amazing. He's constantly attempting to share the gospel, and he just virtually all the time gets shot down. So I'm done means I'm done. He didn't mean I'm done with the email. He meant I'm done.
Oh.
And so I actually responded to him in this email, and I went into a little bit just in case about the day of the Lord and the fact, of course, this is the New Testament, and we know that James didn't believe the day of the Lord was at the cross, and the book of Acts, of course, does not record that the day of the Lord was the cross, but the scriptures explain that the day of the Lord was at the cross. And I also said, you know, James, I have kind of made it a protocol for me to never, quote, drop bombs unless I have the floor immediately after. And James replied to him, and he said, well, Mike, it was my birthday party. I thought I had the floor.
All right, moving right along.
Gospel Revolution.
So Victor Brennan writes to us this week, says, hello, Bearers. Hope all is well in your neck of the woods. I've taken an interest in the Talmud lately. The New Testament is, in essence, the Christian version of the Talmud. What do you think? All the best, Vic. Well, I think you're right.
If Vic has taken an interest in the Talmud, all I've got to say, I feel sorry for the Talmud. Because he's going to find out things, that's for sure. Talmud, watch out.
Yep, watch out. Vic is coming for you.
Vic is after you.
there are two major selections of writings that influence ancient and modern Judaism. One is the Tanakh, which is the law, the Psalms, and the writings, is the way they put it, which we would call the Law of the Psalms and the Prophets. It's what Peter is talking about when he writes Graphe, the writings. And the other one is the Talmud. There are two Talmuds, one of them major, Babylonian Talmud and the Palestinian Talmud. But the Talmud is broken up into three or four different parts, and it's a commentary on the Tanakh. The Tanakh is what we would call the scriptures. The Talmud is a commentary on the Tanakh. So in that respect, Vic, I think you're right on the money, and happy Talmuding.
Exactly.
We got an email from Gordon Dorfer to you. Gordon is from British Columbia up in Canada. He says, love your high priest teaching videos. My mother, brother, and my sister especially would get so excited to hear the good news.
Oh, my.
That all are righteous. My sister passed away recently, but we all knew the truth and had great comfort. Hope to see more teaching videos. I listen to all the podcasts. Thank you, Gordon. Thank you, Gordon. That's great, mate. Keep listening.
Oh, exactly, yeah. If there's anything that keeps resurfacing of those things which have given people great insight of the teachings that I've done over the decades. It is that one, Barris, this great high priest. Now, here is the odd thing. Now, you heard him say they listen to this and they're so glad to know that everyone is righteous. I never said that in this teaching.
Oh, really?
No, this is the teaching that got me saying what I was afraid to say that and wasn't even sure of. I just got up to teach and with armed with the book of Hebrews, and everybody got out of that teaching that everyone was righteous.
Except you.
I'm not sure who all I was leaving out of it. I just said what it said, and I did not impose my doctrine that I was still hanging on to in this. When I hear that, that always amazes me, because more people get more out of that than anything else. It was so transitional, and maybe that's the reason they do, is because it picks up with the line that brings Christianity up to a point and then unravels it, with or without my consent or teaching.
Now, that series, I think that series is freely downloadable off our website, www.thegospelrevolution.com.
Yeah.
This is while you were still preaching in churches, mate. It's a great series. It's excellent. I haven't heard anyone say that they didn't like it. Everyone seems to like it. So go grab it off our website. It's a freebie for you, family. Now, talking about our website, until our new website comes out, we have our products and our podcasts and our website all on different websites. And I just got the email that the new series, The Rise and Fall of Dualism, is up, the ones that you and I shared on up in Calgary.
Yeah.
Also, there's a bonus track that I did on the history of Christianity. It's a one session, so it doesn't go into every actual nook and cranny, but it gives you an interesting and accurate look at how Christianity developed in its first 1,500 years. Mm. The things that Michael shared are going to blow your mind. They are so worth listening to. Can I recommend that you go up there? I don't think that they're much. They're only a few dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Go up there, download them, listen to them, and ring us up or write to us and tell us how wrong we are. I shared on the overarching plan of God. In other words, what was God's whole plan in this whole business of creation and Calvary and Christ? Was there any one cogent, coherent plan that had a start and had a finish? Michael, as I said, shares on some things that had the people there just saying, oh, wow, that was good. We want to hear more. So, family, go to Payloads and look for Mike Williams, or go to our website and find the Payloads link and the products link and download you some good food, good manna.
And I might add that also Barris's teachings, everyone had a lot to say about those.
Was it good?
Seemed to, well, a couple of them was good. Everybody enjoyed this tremendously. And I think that you will enjoy just the fact that they're both in the same series. I think you'll really, really enjoy that.
Okay, moving on to the topic that we've been centered around over the last few months, and that is dualism.
Mm-hmm.
What is dualism? Before we start, let's just define dualism. Dualism is where oneness does not exist. Unity does not exist. There is no Christ in me and I in Christ, or God and I are one. There is none of that. It's all, there is still a God out there and a me in here. There's a heaven up there and a hell down there, and it's all done with fear and manipulation, dualism. It's dualism is man's attempt to reach God, and it's man's attempt, not man's successful attempt. It's man's attempt to reach God.
Yeah, and none of it's successful.
None of it. I mean, if you want to see how much orthodoxy or dualism, which is orthodoxy, if you want to see how successful it was, it brought you slavery. It brought you, in the USA, it brought you unbelievable mass murders all the way through history since its inception. It brought you the Spanish Inquisition. It brought you Protestants killing Catholics and Catholics killing Protestants. I mean, do you really have to know that much more about dualism to say, something doesn't add up here?
Yeah.
So we looked at holy beliefs, orthodoxy versus heresy, holy wars, orthodox murder, such as, you know, the Crusades and jihad versus love in action, holy places, orthodox church buildings versus a church of living stones, holy people, orthodox tribalism versus, you know, it's us and them, holy words, orthodox language versus blasphemy, holy works, orthodox works, such as versus sinful acts. But people, they suffer, and then they do some good works for other people. This is the way that James teaches us, and orthodoxy maintains it. Heaven and hell, orthodox rewards versus I'm at one and always will be. There's nothing ever going to change that. And today we're just going to talk a little bit about karma, dharma, and the universe. Sounds like a Shirley and Laverne, karma, dharma, and the universe.
KDU.
KDU.
Yeah, it sounds like a good university somewhere in Kansas.
We're not in Kansas anymore.
You know, just outside of Kansas. Maybe Dorothy, this is the university she went to when she got caught up in the storm.
There you go. Well, now let's think about karma. What is it, Mike?
Well, some of the friends of Gospel Revolution are Buddhists. And I asked, now here is the thing when you're trying to define from Buddhism what something means. They will quickly defer to, well, that's what it means to some Buddhists. It's quite a bit like Catholicism in that Catholicism really does the same thing. If you approach a Catholic about a specific doctrine of Catholicism to try to address whether or not it is, quote, scriptural or biblical, they will say, well, some Catholics believe that. So not all Catholics have to believe all things. In fact, many Catholics don't have to believe anything at all except to attend. It's strictly tradition. So karma is a great deal like that in the circles of Buddhism. I'm thinking that this term is used in other religions also, but the one that we are most familiar with here in the good old United States of America and the this part of the world is the term karma, which we've gotten all excited about. We've latched on to karma. It is we think it's something very nice, but really karma is just the consequences that you get for not living the life you should, or karma is the reward for living the life that you should. The interesting thing about these rewards, though, is that they take place on this side of life, and a lot like Christianity, on the other side of life also. So you've got rewards both before your death, or you run into, you know, you create bad karma, you're going to get bad things happen. You create good karma, and if you ask, is this judgment? Oh, no, it's not judgment. You know, taking the terms so bad things happen. Oh, no, we can't call something bad. Well, good. No, we don't call anything good. Just because you take those terms out, it doesn't change the results. The results remain the same, even though you desperately try to remove terminology and impose terminology, such as the word karma, to replace the word judgment. Now, even in the Bible, judgment can be for the good or for the bad. But in karma, karma can be for the good or for the bad.
You know, as we were talking about this earlier, I couldn't help reflect on how similar this is to the Judaic law.
Wow.
So you have a law, and the law proscribes your behavior or what your behavior should be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what your behavior actually adds up to might result in something quite different. So you've got the law, and the law says, don't kill. Now, if you do kill, you in turn are going to be killed. This is what the law says, an eye for an eye, life for a life. There's only one way that you could avoid being killed, and that was to run into a city of refuge, as they describe in the book of Judges. Now, when it comes to karma and dharma, it seems to me that dharma is only just the law, because dharma, as you pointed out to me this morning, Michael, is actually an order of things that tells us how to behave. That is what dharma is in these Eastern religions. And the concept of dharma pervades almost all religions in the subcontinent of India and also some in China. So Buddhism, Hinduism, Taoism, Jainism, and so forth are all affected with this concept of dharma and of karma. So you've got the law, and what you're saying is that karma is the results of what happens if you don't keep the dharma.
If you don't keep the dharma law. Paris, I think it's important. We're all the time hearing that these religions are way older than Christianity, but are they older than the Mosaic Law?
No, there is no record of them preceding Judaism.
Now, we can't just be dismissive of which came first in this. It is important. And we cannot take away from the fact that the areas where karma and dharma became descriptive words for something happened to be also in the same area of the world where the law was being preached and being taught. So to disconnect this as a possible response to Mosaic Law and Judaism to come up with a brand and a branch of all of this understanding for a different group of people under different descriptions, almost, well, there really is no hiding. And I started to say, you know, maybe even an attempt to hide it from being Mosaic Law or Judaistic in its manner, but it's very Judaistic in manner.
In that respect, yes, but in other respects, it's rather different. Now, tracing through the history of religions, you've got Abraham coming out of a moon god worshipping religion, and he then comes out following the god Yahweh, who, from the scriptural accounts, is the god that calls Moses and the children of Israel into a nation and winds their way through the desert into their country of Israel. Before then, you had the Hittites. Before then, you had the Egyptians. Well before then, you had the Egyptians with a very well-established religion. And their religion also was based on good for good and bad for bad. You do good, you get good. You do bad, you get bad. The Jewish religion was based on you do good, you get good. You do bad, you get bad. And that's at least 1,000 years before mm-hmm. Christ. Now, the predecessor for Hinduism and Buddhism was the Vedic culture, really, which proceeded by maybe another 1,000 years. But Hinduism and Buddhism started 500 years before Christianity and well after other religions that had a very well-proscribed law or cause and result, which is essentially what karma and dharma appear to be. The biggest difference being, of course, is that the Jewish religion had no concept of life after death, but karma is all about life after death, isn't it?
Yes. Isn't that amazing that this religion picked up on even punishments and rewards after life, and yet Judaism never held those things at all?
Well, the Greeks had them, and the Babylonians had them, and really they all came from the Egyptians before them.
Isn't that amazing? And then where did Christianity get its persuasions about after life punishment type things? Well, we can tell you that it wasn't from the law, wasn't from the scriptures.
No. Where did they get it from?
Well, we've got several religions here they could have picked from.
Well, in pagan religions, which were brought into and overlaid onto the church particularly by Constantine, Mithraism, and the paganistic concepts of Ashtar, Easter, and Christmas. These were just holus bolus brought into Christianity because they suited them. They liked their pagan religion. They didn't want to lose all of their celebratory days.
Exactly. It's such a melting pot of these religions together. You know, one of the validations that I have come up against in this response to the issue of these specific religions that you've spoken of is that there is a real pride in the fact that they're way older than Christianity. Well, since we're saying that Christianity missed it so bad, it really becomes irrelevant how far before Christianity that any of these religions were. They were not before the law, the Psalms, and the prophets. They were not before them. And this sheds a whole different light on this, Barris, when we begin to compare them not to Christianity and its foundations, but to the law, the Psalms, and the prophets and their foundation.
Well, God said he would do nothing without first telling it to his prophets.
Yes, exactly.
And we know, if you buy the series that Mike and I shared in Calgary, you will understand that there is something called the Eternal Council of God. There was a time before time began where God sat down with himself and said, "Now, I'm lonely. I would like other sentient beings with whom to relate on a basis of mutual love and respect. And I would love to be bigger than I am. I want to be a bigger God than I am." So he created us and then incorporated us into himself. I mean, who evolved here, us or God? And he told all of this to his prophets. Now, if the prophets foretold these things, is that what you're saying, Mike?
Yes, the prophets foretold these things, and they didn't foretell anything about these things, that's for sure.
About karma and dharma and...
Or Hinduism or Buddhism, and we've got all of this. So if you accept the scriptures as being the manifestation of the written form of the Word of God, then we know that these things are not mentioned. Where else could they have gotten these concepts of laws and rules and rewards and punishments? Where could they have gotten this? Now, all of these, though, in Judaism was laws and rules and reward and punishment, but in this life. So this is where the spiritualization and the reward and the consequences of the eternal life or life after death did not even start with Christianity. So if we say that Hinduism, Buddhism had to get its quote law and punishment, and reward system from Judaism by merit of the fact that they came after, then what do we have to say that Christianity got its understanding or its inspiration about punishment and rewards after life? Where did they get it from if it was not from Judaism? Well, by default, they got it from these pagan and Eastern religions, from Hinduism, from Buddhism, Jainism, all of these that Barris has gone through for us. So we're beginning to see a rollover pattern here. One comes first, creates something that our people create something out of it that never was, maybe never was intended. And then out of that that never was intended, that which is an extension of the revelation of the scriptures, then they develop these terms. It's mind-boggling, Barris, when you begin to realize that Christianity uses the name of Jesus but depends on Eastern philosophies, religions, and paganism to define its understanding of especially life after death.
Great point. Great point, because I was thinking as you were saying that, exactly that, that the Indian subcontinent developed religions which depended for their success on the fact that you were going to be reborn.
Mm-hmm.
Christianity did the same thing. The only difference between them was that Buddhism, for example, was so much kinder than Christianity because at least it gave you a second chance.
Mm.
They say you never get a second chance to make a good first impression. Not for Buddhists. For Buddhists, you do. But in Christianity, it's a slam dunk. You're in or you're out, and it all happens at the moment your heart stops beating.
Yeah, and even though they do offer, like the Catholics, offer a few more options after death that we just covered.
Good point.
Even though the Catholics offer a few more options, doesn't make it any kinder, folks. There's nothing about limbo or purgatory that is really kinder.
I remember as a kid, I would be sent to the headmaster to get the cuts. Now, I've never heard the word cuts over here, but the cuts is they would have lawyer cane. This is cane that grows, you know, just like any other cane. And he'd have about a 5 foot length of this cane, and you'd put your hands out and he'd whip this cane down on your hands. And if you pull your hand back or anything, old Mr. Hayden used to bring that thing up under the knuckles with just as much force. And that was called getting the cuts. And if you did something really bad, you might get 6 cuts. And if you did something not so bad, 3. And if you were just get out of here, sonny, you might get 1. On many occasions, I had the cuts, and the front of my fingers were purple and green. Now, of course, these days that wouldn't happen.
If it did, the man would be arrested and in prison.
Oh, and yes, yes. Mate, when I left grade 7, my teacher, Mr. Hennessy, he gave all of his kids got one piece of his lawyer cane. I was the only kid in the class to get 2. And he signed them. Now, I used to go up to the headmaster's office and I'd be waiting. What was easier? If I marched straight in and got it and it was over with, or I had to wait? I tell you, getting it over with was the easiest. Mm-hmm. What's purgatory do? Makes you wait. What's limbo do? Well, you just got to wait a bit longer. And if you got with karma, you might have to wait several lifetimes.
Now, here's the very unfair thing about karma. Every bad thing that happens happens because of bad karma. Everything good that happens happens because of good karma.
Everything?
Everything.
Okay.
It's virtually everything. So there's no such thing as free will. It's all cause and effect.
Okay.
There's more cause and effect in Buddhism, or at least where karma is taught, because everything is a response. If you get a good deal on a house that you're purchasing, you'll hear them say it. Boy, you must have some good karma somewhere. If you have a flat tire, it's wow. You know, you got some bad karma somewhere, dude. And we have adopted these terms. And they sound better in our language because we think we're stepping away from the ridiculousness of Christianity. And it's cooler to say karma.
Well, have a listen to this very early poem about karma and causality. And this was in Hindu literature, and it said, "Now, as a man is like this or like that, according as he acts and according as he behaves, so will he be. A man of good acts will become good, a man of bad acts, bad. He becomes pure by pure deeds, bad by bad deeds." Now, what is the difference between that and religions that tell me if I keep the law, God will be happy with me and I'll be a good person? What's the difference?
Well, the difference is you call God universe. That is the only difference, which is no difference whatsoever. When I hear people speaking of these terms as though they are somehow superior to Christianity by the progression of who came first, it's quite possible that Christianity got its profoundly perverted understanding of the scriptures from Buddhism and Hinduism.
Well, in Jesus' day, the people said, who sinned that this man was born blind? I mean, if that's not karma, what the heck is karma?
Well, exactly. And it obviously was in society. I'm learning a whole lot here as we talk, to be honest with you guys. This is cruel. And not only is it you got a flat tire, you had bad karma, but then there's all this whole thing of judgment. So there comes the judgment along with this whole persuasion.
Well, haven't we all heard people say, "Oh, that's God getting back at you," or "He had it coming"?
Yeah, exactly. We're getting an education in this evening, Paris, in which came first here, possibly influencing. We can't say for sure it did, but we do know that this is how things happen. This is how things progress and proceed, whether to the good or to the bad, is by what came before it.
Don't we love saying, "What goes around comes around"?
Exactly.
I mean, this, when you think of all these little sayings, this, we have this pretty darn interwoven into our culture.
We do indeed. It is there. And with karma, Barris, it's not just in this life. And of course, Christianity teaches several phases. Of course, once you go to the other side, in any form of Christianity, you're on the other side. You're staying there. Even if there is an absolute heaven or an absolute hell or a purgatory you can climb out of or a limbo that you wait to see where you're going, such as babies. And I don't know if others, what all the qualifications are for limbo, but I do know that babies were for limbo, and also all of the patriarchs of the Old Covenant were for limbo, according to Catholics. With karma, though, you have to come back, because within this teaching of Hinduism and Buddhism and many other religions is reincarnation. Now, reincarnation sounds like a really nice thing. Oh, wow, I get to come back. What if you come back as a love bug in Florida? And because, I mean, they do teach you can come back in any form of life. You can come back as a snake, a goat, a cow.
Man, it could take you endless cycles to get back here as a human.
In endless cycles, and inevitably. Now, you go to any person who is seeking to find out past life experiences. I don't know how many people have been Pharaoh. I don't know how many people have been kings and queens. I have not once heard that a person has come back in a higher form now, because the last time that they came around, they were born a person with no name, a person who lived in abject poverty. Nobody knew anything about.
And born blind.
Yes, and walked out the door, fell face long down in the mud, and smothered to death at the age of 14. You just never hear that one. Or any. Everybody used to be kings and queens. Oh, you served the Pharaoh. You were his right-hand man. You were the Pharaoh. You were the king of England. You were, you know.
Yeah.
If you hear my exasperation, it's because I'm exasperated with this
well,
stuff.
Well, look, it's exactly the same with people who have dreams that they died and went to heaven and they came back.
Yeah.
At least it seems like that to me.
No.
There's nothing like evidence, nothing like proof, but it makes for a fine story.
And if you know, if folks are listening to me, getting upset with me about
Get upset, but only with him, not with me.
If you're upset with me about this, don't blame me, because you guys are the same ones who say, well, not all Buddhists believe that. So I just have to take what I know and respond to it. Why do all Buddhists and Hindus and other religions get to take it and say, well, this is what, well, no, not everybody believes that. Well, this is what I understand about these things. And this is my response to these things. And these are written things. We're not talking about what I heard from somebody. I have heard these things from people of these different religions. And the attempt to ascend to a higher state, to get to a place you're not in this life. So we've got karma, dharma, nirvana, and universe, actually. So we're adding nirvana to this because they don't like to talk about heaven, but it looks like these religions have developed their own, that in this life you achieve a state of nirvana where you're just always cool. And now this became a big one during the drug culture here in the U.S. during the 70s, because the way to get to nirvana was, hey, little toke here, little toke there. Why are we going into this? Because we want everybody to be freed from the idiocy of cause and effect religion. That's what the gospel frees you from. You know, my friend that has moved back now to the border there at Myanmar or Burma and Thailand to carry out the gospel, and we've got a school going there. And the only reason that we bring this up, folks, is because nobody knows who this is. Believe me, we would not be exposing him to harm here. And his family escaped Buddhism. I remember having a conversation with him, and he said, you know, Michael, he said, this westernized version of Buddhism, he says, as this kind, wonderful religion, he says, believe me, he said, we had to escape with our lives from Buddhism in Myanmar. Now, I don't know what all that means. I'm just telling you another report from somebody from the other side of this situation and who's now come to understand the gospel. I don't like to see anybody in any kind of bondage. Some of my closest friends are very much adherent to this issue of karma, dharma, nirvana, universe, and all it's done is change the words. I'm going to have to stop saying this. I'm going to have to stop saying that it has changed the words of Christianity. Christianity changed these words by reason of secession. By reason of secession. Now, they changed these words, karma, dharma, nirvana, universe, was changed from Mosaic writings to this. These things then were changed by Christians into Christian doctrine mingled with the scriptures. What a mess! Folks, you see why we hang, we tread, we put our foundation, we hang all of our hopes in the scriptures. Nothing on this planet is going to unscrew this mess we've got except a clear understanding of the scriptures. At least Jesus thought the only way we were going to clear up all misunderstandings. Jesus said, now you think, let's forget what he said, you think. But what he was saying is, you're wrong. You think. So what do you got to do, according to Jesus, to get you thinking about spiritual things unscrewed and to get it to where that you have a foundation for what you are perceiving or knowing to be the truth? You have to go back to the scriptures. Man, when Jesus says the only way that you can get your thinking straightened out is to go back to the scriptures, why am I still trying to figure out what, whether or not, or where to place Peter, James, and John or the book of Revelation? Why am I doing that? If they blatantly disagree with the scriptures, then why am I even taking them as valid places to search for understanding? I searched them out until I found out there was no understanding there except opposition to the scriptures and opposition to the cross, opposition to Christ, opposition to the gospel of peace, opposition to the gospel of grace. You found what, Mike, in the teachings of Peter, James, and John and the book of Revelation? Opposition to the gospel of peace and opposition to the gospel of grace. That's what I found. So I stopped going there trying to find. I still read through just to see by comparison how this incredible mess grew to where that we abandoned Paul's teachings and went headlong, whole hog, into the teachings of the disciples and virtually left the teachings of Paul out for these many centuries. Paul's teachings on grace and the gospel peace was a nice way to start and finish a sermon that left out the gospel of peace and the gospel of grace. It was just a nice thing. It was like this is how we soothe you a little bit, you sinners in the hands of an angry God. We soothe you a little bit with grace. We soothe you a little bit with peace. But the gospel of peace and the gospel of grace are not things to soothe us from the consequences of law and punishment and eternal punishment. Cause and effect, the gospel of peace and the gospel of grace eradicate these things. So therefore, by the same prescription, the gospel of grace and the gospel of peace eradicates karma. It eradicates dharma. It eradicates the pursuit of nirvana. It eradicates universe. Because now, and they even come to this rounded thing, oh, well, we're all one in the universe. Then why is the universe standing back rewarding and punishing us if we are one? I'm sorry, folks, that don't float. The dog don't hunt. I mean, we can take this analogy to Tennessee or we can take it to Maine. It doesn't make any difference. This doesn't work. The gospel of peace annihilates these things, Barris. I am not ashamed of this powerful gospel that annihilates all religions on the face of the earth to ascribe or to think that there is a process by which we become spiritual, that there's a process by which we attain spiritual high, that there is a process by which we close this gap between us and God. Man, that's where my search began, Barris, and what you and I have been sharing with the people for weeks. I remember this gap between me and God. There's a gap between me and God, and I've got to do everything I can to close this gap. But thank God, we have good news for you folks. There's no gap. There's no God. There's no man. We're one. This has resulted in the most powerful thing that's ever happened to human beings, and it is the most ignored thing on the face of planet Earth. Get comfortable with you and God. Get comfortable with the absence of karma, dharma, judgment, universe. Get comfortable with the total absence of cause and effect and rewards and punishment on this side or the other side. There's only one side. It's this one. We just went through the issue of heaven and we found out if this is right, We don't leave here. We're still here. There's no recycling to be done, folks. No recycling. No recycling at all. Why are we going someplace that God moved and said that he preferred to live here, and then when we die, we prefer to live there? What's that all about? So here we are. And again, yes, I've gone on a rant. I've gone on a tangent. But we've got to understand that this thing called the gospel of peace and the gospel of grace, eradicates every religious concept around the face of the earth, and everything that they accuse Christianity of and Judaism of, they go turn right around and do by creating different words to enforce the very same thoughts. And it doesn't make any difference whether we develop brand new words and terminology to say it. It is all law and cause and effect, and it's done.
Remember, folks, religion wants to downsize your expectations, outsource your thinking, and repurpose your existence. God's eternal plan was just to enjoy the heck out of you and all of your uniqueness. Don't forget our $10,000 reward for anyone who can show me an example of the actual word antinomian or antinomianism in any of the Greek sources for the Bible, and it's that antinomianism upon which dualism is based. And so it is, family, that we must leave you. Don't forget to visit www.theteacherwithin.com and order your copy of Touching Spirit, The Letters of Menominee. Our buddy Pep Washburn wrote this, and we could not speak more highly of a book, unless it's Mike's, of course. A dollar a week is nothing really, but here at the Gospel Revolution, it could make all the difference for somebody else, just like you, starting their own journey towards thinking for themselves. If you feel that you've received real value from this podcast, then I'm asking you to seriously consider donating a dollar a week or a dollar a day. Why don't you call our office on area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeffrey Robertson about how you can participate. Or just go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the donate link. Perhaps you'd like to invite Mike to your area. It's easier than you might think. Call our office on the number we just mentioned with details, when, where, and why, and we will make it happen. You want to leave a message for Mike or a question for him to answer? Dial area code 234-564-0971 and leave a voicemail. You can find us on Facebook at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Thanks to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands, all the gospel all the time is being broadcast 24/7 at myradiostream.com/gospelrevolution. So now, it's good night from myself, Barris Bartlett.
And it is good night from Michael Williams right here in Houston, Texas. Thank you guys so much. Please give us feedback. We need to hear from you. These emails have been wonderful. As you can tell, they really, really spark my fire and get me to thinking before we ever get into the process of this. We know from your letters, and it reminds us why we're here. We're here for you. We're here to be an encouragement. We're here to lift you. We're here to do anything that we can do to be an inspiration and to help you understand the most powerful thing that ever happened on this earth, the gospel of grace and the gospel of peace.
We hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended does not mean you are right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
I bet we'll do it better.